Peter Meakin. He's a registered professional valuer in Cape Town, South Africa, and associate member of the South African Institute of Valuers from 1993 to the present. And he's a general member of the Municipal Finance Officers and got a Innovator of the Year Award for inventing the Municipal Valuation and Rating System in 2005. He's a principal of Meakin Day Gardner, commercial property brokers. He's on the property development executive in Cape Town. And very importantly, he's chairman of the South African Constitutional Property Rights Foundation that has mandated to take the Minister of Finance to court on the grounds that income taxes and VAT are irrational and unreasonable, whilst the alternative Georgia's land tax are not. I wish I had that.
Well, I didn't need to say any more to that. Ilan, I get the feeling that this is a kind of beauty contest. And I have
That's
waxed.
You're standing there.
I have waxed my legs, I can assure you. I was interested to hear that we, in the south of the continent, have the same sort of problems that you have up there. And also some settlers. I didn't know you, I thought you got rid of all of them. Well, thank you very much for asking me here again. I've been coming to these conferences for about, well, I've been to about six, I think. And I've never really had anything to report. And I was very surprised to get an invitation this time because it was getting quite boring. But we have made some little advances this time, and with much appreciation to the Skalk and Beck Foundation and to the Henry George. Is it the Henry George Foundation in Canada, Frank?
Yes.
So let me, by saying thank you to them, let me just give you a little bit of background. And just to let you know that the South African Constitutional Property Rights Foundation is a think tank. It comprises three members. We are voluntary workers. We don't get paid. We've been doing it for 20 years and started when the Constitution was being written in 1996. The members are Brian Amery, who is a tax consultant, who's going to be out of a job soon, Rob Small, who is a horticulturalist, who helps us to decide what to do when land becomes affordable, and myself, a valuer. We have support in South Africa and internationally, and people subscribe to be members of the South African Constitutional Property Rights Foundation, which you can find at www.sacprif.org. www.sacprif.org. Every year we do a report. And this is for the year ending May 2013. Last year in Argentina, everyone enjoyed a great IU conference, intermingled with quite radical fervor. One speaker accused the president of Argentina of being a terrorist for allowing unearned revenues to be appropriated by landowners. We were also reminded of what a sorry state Argentina and South Africa is when half of the citizens want high land prices and the other half aspire to lower prices so they can get onto the ladder. Now, where those two meet, I don't know, but we're trying to find the way. Back home in South Africa, last year we went to the Parliamentary Finance Committee. Every year, they amend the income tax acts to cope with what the changes they've made in the budget. We objected to the changes they made. We objected to the income tax acts on the grounds that they are, I'll just have to find this, irrational. And a few other things as well. I'll get to those in a moment. To the Parliament Committee. Anyway, the thing to do is to, when you go to the Parliament, and I suggest that you that it's a good forum to do these things, because they, and to join other anti-tax movements. Anyway, we complained to the Minister of Finance about the unruly and insulting behaviour of the National Treasury in dealing with the objections to the amendments last year. The result was that they fired the chief policy director in the National Treasury. We don't know exactly whether he was fired because of us, but we think it was. Then the President of South Africa, we warned the President of South Africa not to sign the Tax Amendment Acts into law because they did not comply with the Constitution. The result was that very soon after, he appointed a commission of inquiry to be headed by a Supreme Court judge to establish whether or not the tax system complies with the Constitution. Whether that was because of us or not, I don't know. SACPRIF also sought a legal opinion on how best to gradually replace the income taxes and VAT with the Henry George single land tax. This is where the Skalkenbeck Foundation and the HC Foundation of Canada came in. The result was, the lawyers acknowledged that there was no known precedent anywhere for our challenge. The bizarre opinions of senior counsel were viewed with incredulity. Without exception, they took for granted the neoclassical tax dogma that taxes on both natural and man-made assets yield the same result, when we all know that there is an alternative to high tax, high land price systems. I just want to talk about this land price, this land price issues, because they are very confusing. You see, land is priceless. That it is unaffordable to everyone. I don't know if you picked it up, but MIT scientists now say that there is a greater than 50% chance that the universe will last more than a billion years. Now, what normally happens when you price land is you determine what rent people are willing to pay for it, and then you multiply by 20 years. Because that's about what people can afford. But that's nothing to do with what it's worth. If the world will last for a billion years, then the value of the land is actually worth its present rent, say it's £100,000 a year, times a billion. Now, if you have to pay that for a small plot in London, or a hectare in the country, nobody would ever be able to afford it. So it is unaffordable. It is priceless. It is a gift. If you think about it, it is confirmed by the fact that you can't reproduce it. When you buy a car, you always look at what would a new Audi cost me. Here you can't do that. It's impossible. You can't add, nobody can add. There's no money in the world which will add an ounce to the weight of the world. So we're in a strange situation here with the pricing of assets, and this is what we... And now we've recently had this opinion from the lawyers about this, and I wanted about pricing. They gave us a 45-page discussion document, and they've recently given us a 4-page summary. I'm very happy to read this later. But I want you to just refer you to one paragraph. It says this: if it could be demonstrated clearly, concisely, and incontrovertibly that Parliament's failure to apply land value taxation, its decision to tax everything except land value, inherently and inevitably results in rising land prices and makes land less affordable and less accessible, then there is a compelling argument that this failure constitutes a breach of the state's obligations in terms of Section 25 of the Constitution to take reasonable measures to foster conditions that enable citizens access on an equitable basis. Now, I'd like to know if there's anyone in this room who couldn't prove that. Please raise your hand. Right, you're all employed, you come to Parliament next year, and we storm the gates, because that's all we have to do. And it seems to me, reading this, I'm sure there are lawyers around, and Frank will surely put me right on this, but if that's true, then this is a huge step for the Henry George movement. Okay, how are we doing? The other thing which we have done recently is at a municipal level, when we challenged, we went to the public protector, who's a body, a government, a state body, which is, you don't have to go to law for it, but you can get this, they will make sure that the state acts in accordance with the Constitution where it can. And we complained, we said, look, what you, they value and rate at a municipal level, both buildings and land in Cape Town. I think it's the same here. Now that is that will increase unemployment. We have 25% unemployment, and so we went to them and said, "No, you can't do this. This is wrong, and you must only tax land." Well, I went and I had a big. I was interviewed with the city valuer. By an advocate of the public protector, and we're expecting an answer on that matter shortly. The other matter which we raised was, and I suspect it's the same in all the town planning zones, is that there is no town planning zone which says you can't use land. I mean, you get permission to use it for a house or a factory or a shopping center or a hospital or whatever. Have you ever seen that a town planning zone says you don't have to use it? Well, therefore, people who hold land off the market because by not using it, it's illegal. And we've got to take that, we're following that up at the same time. Then you will not mind me expressing a note of despair into popular contemporary solutions to the problem of poverty. Here in the UK, the Archbishop of York recently said, all companies should pay the living wage. Well, that's... The falsehood in this statement is that the increased wages needed to pay for a compulsory living wage will destroy more jobs. Anyway, this is we are now in the centenary of the South African 1913 Land Acts, which confined blacks to indigenous homelands in South Africa. Not by my forebears, but by other people. What is not so well known is that today, high land prices caused by Treasury preferring to tax people and not land makes land as inaccessible to the poor as the Land Acts of 100 years ago by high prices. This is in spite of the fact that there are 11 million hectares of unused arable land in South Africa. That is enough for 11 million dirt poor people to become millionaires using their own hand building an estate, maybe a wine farm. Once you can get access to a hectare of land, and if you follow the rules that you have to do to build a decent building, a three-bedroom house maybe, and an estate, maybe a wine estate, that's all it takes. You don't need any capital. You need a few seeds. You need a bit of clay. 3 years later, you've got a decent house. So there's no reason. There's no reason, and this may be the force that Mandela introduced into our constitution. That it means the end to the proletarian existence, to being landless and to being at the expense of employers, miners, and farmers. That will be over in South Africa. When you leave school and you want a job, you go and have a look and see what's around. Now you have to take that job, whatever it is. But when we win this court case, you won't have to. Land will be affordable for everybody, for all 11 million people. There's 5 million of them unemployed, and there's 5 million of them living in disgraceful conditions with a miserable job. They want to escape those slums and go out and make themselves a decent living. So in this auspicious year, SACPIP will be honoring Nelson Mandela's inspirational desire to see land delivered into the hands of the people, an obligation embodied in the 1996 Constitution. Both Mandela and the great Henry George waged an unfulfilled struggle for equitable land access. SACPIP promises that with your support, we are in reach of causing thy kingdom to come. Thank you very much.
I'd like to invite questions. We have about 5 minutes for questions. That gentleman at the back.
Hi. Thank you very much, Peter. That was most interesting. Particularly interested in the business of going to court. It's always crossed my mind as to what scope there might be for going to court for failing to pay a tax that one regards as immoral. I don't know if there are any precedents.
Yes.
Henry George is absolutely clear that most of the alternative, well, all the alternative taxes that don't collect value that the community itself creates involve theft. Are there any precedents, or are you in a position anywhere where that might be a course of action that an individual could choose to take, as it were, as a test case, as a and then a class action.
I don't know that there is, but of course we are going to try and prove that it is illegal, and then cases can come about. But it has been suggested that if you have been promised this land, as the Constitution promises, and it hasn't been delivered by now, you probably have an action for damages. I haven't got land, so I haven't been able to earn a living. I've had to come to town and live in a dreadful shack and pay rent. I haven't been able to grow my own food. I've had to buy it. It's a lot of money. So I think I did. But that's another matter. We're not.
Yes, there's the two sides, isn't there? The failure to collect the rent and the imposition of bad taxes.
That's what we're at. That's where we are. Yeah. Thank you.
Can I just give a small point of clarification? In the UK, there's been at least two instances where people have refused to pay taxes.
Okay.
One was peace campaigners refusing to pay income tax because they didn't want their money spent on armaments. And the other example was perhaps more recent, and that was when Mrs. Thatcher introduced the poll tax. We had poll tax riots on the streets of London, but in addition, many people were taken to court for refusing to pay the poll tax because they argued it was immoral.
Thank you, David. Yeah.
One of the things that you're going to need to do is to establish that your proposals, that George's proposals, will make land affordable.
Yes.
I'm just wondering, if you imagine these 10 million people moving to land which is freed up by this reform, have you made any estimates of what level of land value tax those people are likely to have to pay
for that land? Yes, we have. The average small holding in South Africa is now about 200,000 rand. Well, I can't afford that. I used to, but I can't afford it anymore. The rule of thumb is you divide that by 200. That's the number of that will bring you the monthly rent, which is due. So 20,000 becomes 2,000, becomes 1,000, becomes 500 rand a month. Now you can earn just by growing your own food, it's worth 4,000 rand a month. So it's an immaterial amount of money to have to pay in rent. Yeah. There are areas where you won't have to pay anything. Yeah.
You're dividing by
200. That's about a 6. It's about a PE ratio of 16 years. Yeah. It's a rent multiple. When you buy a piece of land, it's a rent. You're paying the rent that's due today for 200 months in advance. Okay.
One more question.
Peter, it's interesting that yes. When I bought my first piece of land in Yorkshire in the early 1970s,
yes.
The valuer who came to value that land said it's worth 20 times its annual rent.
Well, that's amazing. So it hasn't changed much.
That he, we bought another piece of land
yes.
In Scotland,
yes.
A rather larger piece of land, 650 acres,
yes.
In 1992. And the price that I bid for that land was 20 times its annual rent.
Do you think that's a law?
And we bought it. Okay. No one else wanted it at that time.
Right.
And that was bought at a price which
That's very interesting.
I could afford to pay and make a living on it.
Yes.
The current price of agricultural land in Scotland is at least twice what any sensible person could pay and make a living on.
Well, of course, it's very sensible to buy land at any time because the prices are being subsidized.
If you have the cash, you don't have to borrow the money to do it.
Yeah. I'm not even sure about that. I mean, I do know that I have never paid tax in South Africa because the capital appreciation in my land has always exceeded the taxes I paid. Yeah. So I've advanced the money. But at the end of the day, I'll get it all back.
So the 20 times rule is still...
It's interesting.
I think it's time to break. Coffee and tea. We have a chance, perhaps, to informally ask questions from the speakers of this morning. So I'd just like to give a round of applause.